Mark Becker here with the Rational Revolution. What's up, revolutionaries? We got dear friend Mike Madrid. Sorry I cut you off there, but you were talking on the other side about Mexican schools and what happened there.
Yeah, so throughout the Southwest, early in the 1900s, there we had school segregation, no different than you had with black and white segregation in the South. And again, this is a story that's not often told or made much aware of, but the actual court case in the federal jurisdiction that overturned segregation was not Brown versus Board at first. The first court case was a California case called Mendez versus Westminster, which eliminated Mexican schools, the segregation of schools, and actually Thurgood Marshall filed an amicus brief, understanding that that case would be precedent for Brown versus Board.
Well, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think a lot of this history, unfortunately, because of the dark times that may be coming, will start coming to light about the Mexican impacts of what happens during a dark period of history in our country.
Well, I want to talk about what's coming because, so, you know, the Trump famously in 2016 said he was going to build the wall, Mexico was going to pay for it, LOL, right? But he also promised mass deportations. He failed on both accords. Is this different?
Well, I mean, look, it depends on what the definition of mass deportation is. Do I believe he will crack down on trying to get some of the most violent offenders out there? And they are there, incidentally. Yeah. No one is suggesting that everybody here is, you know, an angel. They're not. And there needs to be a process where that is remedied. For I don't think anybody disagrees with that. Mm-hmm. The question is, does it go beyond that? And what now? Look, I would never bet that Donald Trump would do the right thing for humanitarian reasons. Uh-huh. But for economic reasons, with a lot of his wealthy friends, a lot of the industries in this country are reliant on this labor. That's why people are here. So whether it's agricultural farming and picking, or whether it's processing or meat packing in the Midwest, you go on and on and on. The hotel industry, the service sector is overwhelmingly reliant on undocumented labor. That's why there are 20 million workers here. So, are those interests going to just say, okay, well, we'll let these folks go and then quadruple our labor costs? Highly unlikely, highly unlikely. But it's also, by the way, if you were to do that, extraordinarily inflationary.
Oh my God,
inflation
yeah.
would explode. So there's a lot of economic reasons why he would not, but he's not going to do the right thing because it's the right thing.
Right. You know, and it's interesting. So here in where this show is recorded in Green Bay, Wisconsin, we have a huge meatpacking company. We have a couple of them. And I drive past on my way home every day past a massive dairy farm, and it's not white guys out there at 8 o'clock at night milking cows and shoveling manure. You know, it's not.
Of course it's not.
And it's so funny because every time I've talked to someone about, oh, they're taking our jobs, it's like, you're not going to do that. Tell me you're going to do that.
Under any circumstance, no matter what the pay wage is, you will not do that job.
Right.
And that's what we have to recognize is and that's a foundational part of the economy. The dairy industry is foundational to what we do. It's not like you're making, you know, doorstops. This is necessary. And so once these economies become crippled, you're going to have a public reaction. And that's why I'm convinced that the economic interests that are reliant on this labor won't allow it to happen. Now, we'll see. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion and tension. But the reality is there's not a lot of white guys waiting in line to grab those jobs, shoveling manure in the middle of the night.
So he's going to do the right thing for the white guys and keep those people here, right? That's what his plan is.
That's kind of the history of the country, and that's why I wrote this Substack, because this is not new. This is a story as old as time. As old as the country.
He talked about like using the military. Like, is that legal? Can he do that?
Well, like I said, it's been done before, and the way you get around it by saying legal is you declare these enemies of the state.
Oh.
And that opens up a whole different can of worms. It's kind of like what we did with the Japanese in turning the Japanese, right? Is you say that this is, you know, a domestic terrorist plot, and, you know, we think that, you know, whatever rationale you can come up with begins that's how you get the ball rolling with engaging the military. And remember, in both of these mass deportations, the military was used.
Right.
So there's precedent for it. Presidents have done this before And if there's ever a president who would do it again, he's the one who's going to be sworn into office on January 20th.
I think, and one thing that, I talked to you about this before we were on the air, one of the things that I want people to do, and what I do with this show, is to try to educate and arm people with, how to see this for what it is. As we talked to Mike Madrid here, who's an expert on this stuff, how can people cut through the dog whistle stuff about, I don't know, stand back and stand by and all this other stuff. I talk to people and they say, well, he can't control who supports him. He can't. How can they see the racism for what it is?
Well, I think the first thing is to call it on the carpet, because you absolutely can control it. Yeah. Whatever you think of his policies, Ronald Reagan spoke out against the David Dukes in the party.
Yep.
Barry Goldwater's whole movement was predicated on driving white nationalists, white supremacists, and John Berkshire's out of the party.
Yep.
So it is a complete fabrication to say you can't determine who supports them. You can delineate morally why these people should or should not be standing for you. So to me, that's kind of the most offensive moral capitulation, is to say, well, you can't help it if the racists support you. Yes, you absolutely can.
Yeah, you can.
Okay? And so the fact that he doesn't tells us everything that we need to do. But what I would also suggest is this. If you're in a debate or discussion with people and or him or whoever else about how this can or can't be done, you're already losing this fight and allowing this to be held on false pretenses, because you don't see people of moral standing with racists supporting them. You don't see people of good character with the Proud Boys behind them.
Yeah.
And so that you don't need to justify your natural instincts and righteous indignation. It's there for a reason. We all know that it's wrong. He knows that it's wrong, incidentally. And so that I think is becoming part of the character test of this nation at this moment in time. And it's what we have to struggle with to kind of demand that this be a better part of who we are.
Yeah, I said this last week on the episode that we talked a little bit about that. And I said, if you walk into a room of Trump supporters and on the right, you see, white nationalists and the Proud Boys. And then on the other side, you see, anti-gay, Moms for Liberty, hate groups and all of that. You're standing in the wrong room.
Right. That's exactly it. It's like back in 2016, we would say, I'd get asked all the time, are you calling all Trump supporters racist? And I'm not, I'm not saying all Trump supporters are racist, but I'm saying all the racists are Trump supporters.
Right.
So I mean, if you walk into that room, we all have that spider sense tingling that
yes,
this is not right. Trust that, because that's why that's there.
Right.
You know when something is not right. And that was actually the speech I gave at Cooper Union at the 150th anniversary of Reagan's speech. It was literally called this. This is not right. That was the message. We don't need to explain it. It's not right. And Republicans do know it's not right.
Well, and not all Trump supporters are racists, but they certainly don't have an issue with being on the same team as them.
Yeah, exactly right. They're comfortable with it now.
Right. And so,
or always were,
yes,
by the way.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, pass it off as, well, he can't control it. So how do you think this time would be different than 2016 with him actually being able to go through with some pretty dark stuff?
Well, I do believe two things. One, I believe that I think incompetence really saved us the last time.
Mm.
And I think that there's some elements to that this time. Remember, as I mentioned, I think in the early part of the discussion, in 2016, he surrounded himself with at least some establishment figures who had a basic concept and philosophy and understanding of government. This is not the case. Matt Gaetz, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., these are not serious people who are interested at all in advancing the cause of America. That is obviously problematic and horrifying. But at the same time, that leaves the opportunity for resistance, because remember, this interregnum period between the election and the swearing in is sort of a helpless moment. Joe Biden is the president, and all we're doing is responding to stories. Once he becomes the president of the United States, you are going to see the resistance, the opposition, consolidate swiftly and strongly I believe that's to my core. And now what you're going to see is less competent actors running the government responding to that political pressure. And you're going to have a lot of people in the business community saying, you know what? The instability of this government is not good for business. You're going to have to, because it's not, by
no.
the way.
Right.
Everybody in the world's biggest market is the United States. Having us unstable is not good for business. He is going to be responsive to that. It's why people stepping up and voicing their concerns and being good, active, responsible, moral citizens is extremely important in the coming years.
So what can people do?
Well, I think a lot of it is we keep doing what we have been doing. And like I said, the difference between an election and civil, you know, protest is an election is about a hypothetical. It's about what you want it to be. Civil protest is about the factual, the actual, what is actually happening. Those are two very, very different considerations. And when things do begin to start happening, you are going to see people getting up and speaking out and not being afraid to speak out, which is the most important thing. There's going to be a fear that if I say something, then you know I'll be on a list, or they're going to come out and get me. That's how authoritarianism wins. And the stronger you are, the louder the chorus gets. So we have to remember that you've got to know there are strength in numbers, and you've got to be one of those numbers being strong.
Yeah, I talk to people every week about having the courage to say what needs to be said, regardless. I think that's really important.
If not, it does get worse.
Right, right. And final thoughts about how if this happens, and this what can good people do? I didn't want to talk about this, but I have neighbors who he works in an assembly line at a plant. How can I help them?
Well, the first thing to do is ask, right? And be that voice, be that person. And I'm not trying to make an equivalency, but when governments do start hunting people amongst them, it is only the neighbors, it is only the citizens around that can help. And whatever that may mean, it may mean finding a lawyer. May mean, offering some advice. It may mean calling a congressman that you know. It may be, it may mean more than that. But for the moment, I think the important thing is early in advance, is asking and letting people know, because there's extraordinary fear right now. There's terror in households right now in America. As much as so many of us are unsettled, there is sheer terror in many, many neighborhoods in this country. And letting them know that you are an ally and a supporter and somebody who can give them safe haven regardless of what they need, it would be incredibly comforting at this moment and would probably pay off with big dividends in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, and I never... What a surreal thing to be talking about.
Yeah, but this is our moment. It is surreal. This is something that we thought was behind us, but we have to remember that history rhymes. It never goes away. This will never be eliminated from the face of the earth as long as there are human beings. That's not the way this works. But what is required is each of us to do our part at this moment in time. And history has told us if we meet the moment, we will come out of this better and stronger. We will.
I believe that too, and I cannot thank you enough for your time here today. I can't thank you enough for your activism and for what you're doing and for your voice, bringing voice to millions of people. Seriously, it's amazing.
You're doing the same thing, and that's what it's all about. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your audience. I appreciate the engagement. Check out that article on Substack.
Yes.
It is a little bit jaw dropping. Educate yourself on what has happened in the past. Be armed with that. This is not hypothetical. There's evidence on how it was done and actually how to respond. So let's learn from those successes too.
Awesome. Mike Madrid, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you. You bet.
All right. We'll be back right after this on The Rational Revolution.